It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. Fred, what do you think about talking a lot about starting pitchers this week?
Yeah, that seems to be a hot topic right now because, you know, an ace investment either often even makes or breaks your season.
And some guys that we sort of might have thought were aces, where there are some worries about. I think that's kind of, going to dominate a lot of what we talk about. But we're going to start with something on the other end, a guy that nobody is worried about at all. That's Jake Arrieta. He throws his second no-hitter in what, if it were in the same season, would be in the span of about two months of baseball. And I saw a stat today. I believe I saw it. He has a 0.86 ERA over something like that's 24 starts. Is he, I mean, this minute almost doesn't matter who's the best pitcher in baseball, but from here to the end of the year, would you rather have him? Would you rather have Kershaw?
Yeah, I think I'd have to take Kershaw coming off the 300 strikeout season because, you know, nothing against Arrieta, but he's not, like, I'd be surprised if he had 250 strikeouts this year. I don't think he'll even get to there. I'm expecting maybe 220 or something like that. So I think the strikeout difference is big enough that I would probably I would take Kershaw for sure. Do you agree with that?
I think so, yeah, I think so. But I think it has gotten to the point where that's not a stupid question, and I think you could even have said at the beginning of the year that's a dumb question.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think what Arrieta has done early in the season, the debate prior to the season was, is the second most valuable starting pitcher Scherzer or Arrieta? And in most drafts that we talked that we felt like Arrieta might be number two, and in most of my drafts I saw Scherzer going second among starters. I wasn't impressed with Scherzer down the stretch last season, so I preferred Arrieta just based on that. But I think he's distanced himself from Scherzer or Sale or anyone else, and now he's clearly number two. And, you know, the debate is more, could he be number one than is he number three?
Another guy that I would want to throw in there, and I know you already know who I'm going to say, and anybody who listens to this regularly knows who I'm going to say, not for one, though you can make a case he's the best this minute, but how high has Noah Syndergaard climbed based on just a few starts? And I know confirmation bias, and I know small sample size, but I also know what this guy's skills are, and I know what he's done so far. How high has he climbed for you?
Yeah, I think he's climbed into number one starter. Like, for me, at the start of the season, he was just outside my top 15 starters. And now, I can say between his success and the struggles of some of the pitchers that we'll talk about in a moment that were picked ahead of him in draft, I think he has to be in the top 10 now. I don't think he's going to throw 220 innings this year. I just can't see him being in the top five with some of those names we've already mentioned. But once you're outside that group, I mean, with the strikeout rate and the ratios are great, like, I don't see why you can't consider him once you're outside the top five. Like, and I feel like he has to be. If we were drafting today, he has to be among the first 10 starters. And he probably goes in front of the other Mets aces. Do you think that that's likely if you were drafting today?
For me, yeah. Yeah, and I guess the question is, so, you know, we're not drafting today, but if you're trading, are you treating this guy the way you treat any other number one, a fantasy number one, again, short of an Arrieta, short of a Kershaw? If it comes to trade talks, again, look, I'm a shameless Syndergaard honk. This is nothing new. I've been on this guy's bandwagon, so I'm sort of biased here. But I don't feel like at this point it's a selling high. I mean, I have to do this all year, but I feel like at this point in trade talks, he's a guy you treat as a legit clear number one. Do you view him that way, or are you still holding off a little while?
Yeah, no, I do. And, yeah, I view him as a notch below, I'd say, Kershaw, Arrieta, Scherzer, Sale. I'm not sure if I do view him as a notch below Bumgarner anymore, just with Bumgarner getting off to, like, kind of an average start this season. So I feel like then he's in the next group with Bumgarner, with, you know, some guys we're going to talk about here in a minute, you know, Kluber and guys like that, like Strasburg. You know, I feel like he's in that next group. So if you're out looking for an ace in a trade, you're just as fine to go after him. The problem is it'd be so hard to trade for him right now because his owner's probably in love with him.
Right, right. Now, here's my question is regarding, and look, we'll get to the actual script you put together shortly, but you mentioned another guy that I think is interesting and is worth talking about. You know, Scherzer was shaky down the stretch last year. He's really much better in the first half than in the second half, and he certainly hasn't been bad this year, but he has two very good starts and two starts, and he's done that against Braves, Phillies, Marlins. Now, the Marlins are not a bad offense, but he's done that against what should be kind of the soft underbelly of the schedule. If we're talking about bumping Syndergaard up because of basically a strong stretch run and a strong start to this year and the skill set, are we bumping Scherzer down at all as a result of a somewhat rocky second half and a somewhat slow start to this year?
Yeah, I think we can a little bit, and maybe a good comparison is what you mentioned about Arrieta. When you put it in perspective of his ridiculousness now over 20 starts, like it's not just the start of the season, and with Scherzer, it's being a high strikeout pitcher who isn't really delivering a great ERA, and it's over about 20 starts now going back to last season. When we were getting ready for this season, one of the stats that I noticed, Scherzer's last start last season was against the Mets, and it was right at the end of the year, and the Mets had already wrapped everything up and were like completely disinterested in the game, and he was terrific in the game. But if you take out that one start, his ERA in the second half would have been just over 4. So, I mean, that's not the kind of ERA over a half season that you think for someone who's a top 3 fantasy starter when there are so many good starters out there. So I'm not saying he can't still be regarded as third, but there's definitely, we can come up with a few reasons now to maybe bring him back to the pack. But it's just the strikeouts. Like, there aren't other than Kershaw and Sale, there aren't really other pitchers that float in the 260, 270 range for strikeouts over a full season.
Right. And the other thing is, you've talked about it correctly, that Syndergaard is a guy who will not be pushed. If Scherzer's healthy, he's going to get probably 220 innings. I mean, he's a guy that is going to work. They're going to pitch him deep into games if he's healthy. So, you know, that is one thing. When you talk about strikeouts, he's not a guy who's going to be coming out after 6 when he's pitching well very often. But
if you own Syndergaard, would you trade him for Scherzer right now?
I don't think I would do that trade in either direction right now.
Yeah, I think I would trade for Scherzer and just assume that, you know, that the ERA is going to come down, and I just want the extra innings and the workhorse and everything. But I could see, especially if you were like someone like you who really liked Syndergaard, like for those who drafted Syndergaard because they really believe in him, then I he's not a sell high guy. You might as well hold. If someone doesn't really believe in him and they drafted him just because he was kind of the next pitcher on their list in round 4, then I could see the case for it.
Yeah, I'm not willing to let somebody else have his breakout year. So that's
yeah, and that's the human side of fantasy baseball. It's really cool. Like, it's if you love a guy going into the season, and then you get him, and then he starts to prove that you were right. Like, it's really hard to part ways with him at that point.
Yep. So let's move on to some the opposite direction here. Some guys that are not off to good starts, and one that really jumps out at me that you note, Adam Wainwright. I think it's fair to ask how worried we are about this guy. He is, you know, it's been a while. It's been 2 years since he put up a good, healthy, full season. The thing that screams to me from his line, and look, small sample sizes, but Adam Wainwright throws strikes. He's walked 9 guys in 16 innings this year. That has me a little worried. Where are you on the worry meter with Wainwright?
Yeah, I am really worried, and I was hoping, so going into last season, he was one of our, at our site, our popular bust picks when we would have those preseason articles, because he had shown some concerning signs late in 2014, and then I was hoping, trying to look at it positively, I was hoping maybe that long layoff in 2015 would be good for his arm, because it wasn't an arm injury, and then he got the long break, but that just doesn't seem to be the case, and yeah, there's just a lot of concerning signs there. Like, I'm not dropping him or anything like that, but he's not someone I would go out and try to buy low on unless the discount was like really steep.
Yeah, that's exactly it for me. I'm if somebody's just desperate or if there's a good fit, I would take him on. But yeah, I don't really view him as a buy low kind of guy. I mean, you know, one of the things is I think it's worth noting that he was a guy who struck out a bunch of hitters, and for sure. And look, I saw that curveball firsthand a lot. I saw the number of things he can do. He's a pitcher, but you know, he was never an overpowering guy. And a guy like that loses a little, and I think they're more vulnerable. I'm looking at the numbers. The thing that really jumps out to me here is that he is not getting ground balls. And again, I'll say this again and again because I remind myself and remind people out there, sample size. But when Adam Wainwright's not getting ground balls, that is as worrisome as anything because that's who he is. That's what he does.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, when a starter struggles at the beginning of the season, what you want is for you to look at their numbers and look at kind of those background numbers and see, okay, he's the same guy. He's just been unlucky or something of that nature. He's had a bad inning here or there. And with him, you're right, the concerns are it doesn't even look like the Adam Wainwright that was a fantasy ace, you know, in his prime with great control and the ground balls. Like, it just doesn't look like the same guy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's I even hate to say this because this is a guy I can't say I know him personally, but I covered him enough that he's a guy I'm fond of, and I pull for him. He's somebody that I am a fan of, and it's not good to see. One guy who is showing some weirdly mixed, some really good and some really bad signs, Chris Archer has 29 strikeouts in 19 and two-thirds innings. He also has 11 walks, 6 home runs, 3 wild pitches, and leads the league with 30 hits allowed. I have no idea what to do with this guy. He's always been a guy who the question was, will he throw enough strikes? And he's not this year. So I don't really know what to make of him, but I will definitely say he's more of a buy low to me than Wainwright is. Are you with me there, or are you off of Archer?
Yeah, okay. I'll say he's more of a buy low than Wainwright, but not to me, he's not as much of a buy low as maybe some others that we'll talk about, like Kluber or Bumgarner, or maybe not Bumgarner anymore, or Harvey. I'd rather buy low on one of them than Archer. I don't know. With Archer, I'm concerned. The reasons I'm concerned, like, his schedule's tough.
Yeah.
For example, Wainwright gets a start here against the Padres, like in San Diego. That's just a nice way to maybe give him a chance to try to get something positive going, whereas Archer, I feel like, is just constantly facing tough lineups. And I'd love to see him just have a really easy start at some point that he can build off of. And then he wasn't good in September of last season. So, you know, like we're talking about with Scherzer, like, it's not just the beginning of this year. Off the top of my head, I think his ERA was in the sixes in September last season. So, this is more than a 3 or 4 start stretch that he's been struggling.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Again, he's a guy I like a lot, and he's a guy where you can still watch him and see the stuff. And that's the difference to me is I can watch him, and you can see stretches where you say, oh, that's the guy. And I don't know that we've seen that at all from Wainwright. And I think that's the difference with him and some of these other guys is – and Archer has harnessed his control before. I got to think he's going to be able to do it again. Now, it may take a while, but I'm probably willing to find out if somebody's looking to get rid of him.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing I'll say, and this is a little against Archer, but with his strikeout rate, sometimes I'll see that often when someone's struggling, they'll say, well, the strikeout rate's really high, but then you also have to put in the perspective that he's facing more batters per inning right now than he usually does, right? Like when these pitchers are going well, they're facing 3 or 4 batters in a typical inning, and they're getting one strikeout, or maybe a little on a ratio, like a little more than that. Right now, with all the walks and with all the hits he's going up, like he's facing more than 3 or 4 batters per inning. So it makes sense that he would strike, because he still has some things going well, so it makes sense he would strike out a fair amount of batters because he's facing so many of them right now.
No, that's a great point, and that's why it's a really good reminder in general to use strikeout percentage rather than strikeout rate if you're trying to do analysis. If you're really trying to figure out what a guy's doing, it's always better to tie those numbers to plate appearances rather than innings. It's just it's a safer way to go about it. One guy I am not terribly worried about right now, one guy I would love to buy low on if somebody was panicking, is Corey Kluber. You look at the peripheral numbers, and the strikeouts are pretty good. He's won an inning. The walks are down. He has not given up a lot of home runs. I mean, you kind of look at those ratios. You sort of cover the left side of the screen and look at the right side of the screen, and it looks pretty good. I am not worried about Corey Kluber. Are you?
Yeah, not really. In Tout Wars, I did offer Al Melchior, that owns Corey Kluber. I asked him this week if he was worried and if he was interested in maybe owning someone like Dallas Keuchel instead, and you know, give him a chance to jump off. He took Kluber in the auction for a few dollars more than I paid for Keuchel, and I was willing to talk about that switch if he was interested, because I'm not really worried about Kluber. I will say that I owned Kluber in some leagues last year, and I did find him to be a little, this is kind of what I felt like, not to this degree, but a little inconsistent start to start or even within a start. I felt like when I owned him, like he just, when he had a bad start, it was the bad inning or the bad two innings. That's kind of what happened with him against the Mets last time out. Like, he just had those starts where he looks awesome for four or five of the innings and then doesn't look very good for one or two. And I kind of just felt that was his tail in 2015 and kind of already again. So maybe I'm not 100% where I was with him in March, but I'm pretty close. I'm not even the same vicinity as I feel about Archer or Wainwright.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And we kind of throw him in here because we're talking about struggling starters, but it really is basically one bad start. David Price has been pretty good. The overall numbers look bad because he just got lit up yesterday for 8 runs and in 3 2/3. But is David Price even on this list for you, or is he just a guy who had a bad start?
Yeah, he's the same as Kluber to me, where, you know, I guess we can have, we talked in before the season about how maybe sometimes people overrate Price because he's such a workhorse and so consistent in real life, but he's not really a top five fantasy starter. He's more of a top 10 or 12. So this doesn't really change much about it. I guess it pushes. So if someone offered me Syndergaard for Price right now or Syndergaard for Kluber, I would have preferred either of the veterans on draft day, but now I might prefer Syndergaard. So I guess I'm a few percentage points off where I was, but not really. Like, I'm not trading Price for Marcus Stroman or something like that. I still believe that Price will be an ace this year.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I'm just looking, you know, his peripherals before yesterday were outstanding, even with that ERA a little high. But, you know, I think the thing to remember about Price is that, you know, he's going to be subject to a little bit of it. I mean, I think that's, look, he's been in this division for a while, and we know that. But, you know, Fenway is a place where you can strike out some guys and not walk many guys, and a couple of balls can be hit funny ways, and you can end up with a rough line. You know, Baltimore is that way. Toronto, this is a Yankee Stadium. This is he's still in the AL East, but he's not getting half of his starts in St. Pete. And so I think it's worth remembering. I think it's something you probably talked about at the beginning of the year, but it is worth remembering that it's a little different game now for him than it was before. I shouldn't say that it was before. It's a different game for him than it is for some of these guys. And even with his skill set, what is going to be asked of him is different from what's going to be asked of Syndergaard or even Kluber or Scherzer.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And sometimes you go back to the very beginning of this conversation, look at where the top pitchers pitch. They're all in the National League, right? Kershaw, Arrieta, Scherzer, all in the National League. You know, like, that sometimes, like, that makes a difference a little bit. Like, it's going to be a grind for Price this year, and he's going to have the odd bump in the road. I think overall he'll be really good, but, you know, sometimes if I'm kind of flipping a coin between two pitchers at the same level, right now the way baseball is with certain rebuilding clubs and certain divisions, I'd just rather have the one in the National League.
I think that's perfectly reasonable. Now, we stay in the American League East, but we go to a guy who has the advantage that I just noted, which is that half of his starts are in St. Petersburg. You pointed out something, and I just looked it up and put it all together here. Well, I didn't put it together, but Drew Smyly, as a member of the Rays, 22 starts, 136 innings, 148 strikeouts, 35 walks, 8-5, 2.58. Now, he has not stayed healthy much, but when he's taken the ball for them, he's been very, very good. And look, that team's not stupid. You know, when they targeted him as a guy in trading their franchise pitcher, you had to figure the guy they were getting was somebody they liked a lot. How high are you on Smyly right now?
Yeah, I'm pretty high on him. Like you said, like, if you just take his numbers with the Rays and cover up the name and show them to anyone, they would say, oh, that's the number one mixed league starter. Like, that's the way he's pitched as far as whip, strikeout rate, you know. I guess my stance on Smyly hasn't changed that much. I was pretty high on him going into the season, but my concern is just the time that he's missed due to injury, and we just won't settle that until August or so. You know, it won't really be until we're into the second half and he hasn't been injured that we can say, okay, this is a breakout year for him. I felt like maybe he's a little better than I expected out of the gate, but I felt like he is someone you'd really want to own in April. And if we were doing a April-only fantasy baseball league, I felt like he was like a borderline ace. It's just a question of, are you going to get 145 or 150 innings from him, or are you going to get 195 innings from him? And that's what's currently kind of keeping him out of that top 15 or 20 starters, then we just won't know for a while.
I am remaining skeptical on Matt Latos. Are you in or are you with me sort of still sitting this one out for a little while?
Yeah, totally skeptical. And what's interesting is I didn't know where you were going to go because, you know, for those listening, we don't tip our hand in the notes before we start, and I wasn't sure where you would go with him. But, yeah, I'm skeptical too. He's just so bad last year, and I know that sometimes these guys figure out a different way to go about things when they're older and they've lost some velocity and everything. But I don't know. I feel like this is a huge sell high right now, that if you own Latos, you can get anything for him that you feel like is a long-term piece to your pitching staff or your hitting lineup, then I would trade him in a second.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I will say he has gone from do not touch to I'm watching with some interest strictly because of the Don Cooper factor. I mean, that there are certain, we've talked about this before, we've talked about the Pirates in particular, but there are certain situations where I'll believe a little quicker, and the White Sox would be one of those situations where if a guy starts showing results with Don Cooper, I'm a little more inclined to believe that it might be real than in some other places.
Yeah, no, that makes sense for sure. And, yeah, and I'm definitely not recommending, you know, dropping him or just assuming that this can't continue. You know, I would, if I owned him, if I had been, you know, picked him up maybe just for a two-start week or something like that, I don't think many people have these kind of expectations for him. But if I had him, I would keep him. But I think I'd be looking hard on the trade market to see, you know, what I could get for him right now.
I think that makes sense. Is there anybody you actually like in the Colorado rotation for anything more than, like, a week where they're going to San Francisco and San Diego?
Well, I think it was just last week when we were talking that I said I wouldn't own anyone in the Colorado rotation. And then what did I do on Sunday night in the Labor League, 15 teams? I picked up Chad Bettis for this week, and he was fine in Cincinnati. Of the options, I just kind of intrigued by him, just looking at his stats, and I feel like in that 15-team league, I'm not going to drop him. How about that? Which is what I would usually do with a Rockies pitcher after I use him for one road start. I'm going to keep him and kind of take a look. But we talked about the Phillies having turned the corner with some of their rotation, and I don't think the Rockies are at that point yet. But, you know, Bettis has been pretty good so far this year, and Chatwood's been okay, and John Gray's coming back. So it's a little more promising than it usually is there.
Yeah, I think I'm still only, it's going to be a San Diego Dodger Stadium or San Diego San Francisco week with those guys. I haven't seen enough of it. And the other thing is, and this is, it may not be fair because this is sort of a broader team thing, but it seems like about 2 out of 3 years in April, we talk about the Rockies, just in baseball. The Rockies get off to some 12-8 start, and we talk about, hey, look out, this is the year. And then it doesn't happen. And I am completely pulling this out of thin air. I haven't looked at any information, but I do wonder if for everybody, unless you live there year-round and are really adjusted to it, if everybody wears down playing there every day over the course of the year. I really kind of wonder. I mean, everybody in baseball wears down, but I wonder if that is magnified playing at altitude where it's just such a different experience that I kind of wonder if it just in general you should be wary of April Rockies numbers. I'm just pulling that out of thin air. I have no actual data. It's purely anecdotal, but it's something that I've been thinking about recently.
Yeah, no, you could be right. But the good thing about these Rockies pitchers, if you're picking them up, is the investment's so low that you can jump off anytime. Like I said, I'm going to keep Chad Bettis, so I'm going to keep him for another week. If he has, I think he's a two-start pitcher next week. You know, if he gives up 5 runs in both starts, I'll jump right off. Like, I'm not going to be patient with him at all. And it's some of my interest does come back also to there being so many rebuilding clubs in the NL. And I usually say I wouldn't use a Rockies pitcher at home, but they are going to have series where the Braves are in Colorado or the Phillies are in Colorado. And, you know, maybe I would use them against some of those lineups even at home, especially if the starter on the other team seemed like they'd be someone who is going to struggle there. I don't know. It's still not, like, you're not chasing, like, a lot of upside with any of these guys. And if you're in a 12-team league or smaller, I wouldn't touch them.
It's a fair point because it is, I think we kind of have to adjust a lot of the ways that we think about pitchers this year because of the NL, because of those matchups. Because, as you say, there will be times when you get the Braves and Phillies or you get the Reds and Brewers or you get the Padres in one of those teams. And it's, I think it's worth remembering that that's significant. It's not everything, and sometimes those teams will score runs, but I think it's worth remembering. So let's move on to closers. The Braves are a curious situation anyway, but Jason Grilli has not been good. Aroldis Vizcaino has. Are we a little more skeptical of this going to use Vizcaino in high leverage? I sort of feel like that's going to go away pretty quickly. I sort of feel like Freddie is going to try and get every win he can out of this team, and it won't be long before Vizcaino is his guy when he's got a lead in the ninth.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I just can't see them saving Grilli for the ninth inning the way things are going right now. You know, maybe he'll get going at some point, but right now I just can't see that happening. So I feel like Grilli has to work an earlier inning because, people talk about high-leverage innings and things like that, and I get that, but at the same point, something that isn't discussed, I think, often is if you bring in someone like Grilli for a high-leverage inning in the eighth and he, you know, doesn't look great off of the first couple batters, it's a lot easier to take him out and either bring in Vizcaino for, you know, more than three outs or bring in someone else, you know, a lefty-on-lefty matchup or just someone else. Whereas once you've kind of used most of your best relievers and you saved your closer for the ninth and then he doesn't really look like he has it, now you're kind of done. So I just can't see them saving him for the end. I would own Vizcaino in every league. And Grilli, I think I would drop in 10 and 12 team leagues and maybe 15 teams. I'd be close in 15 team leagues.
I think that's a good point. I just thought something was really striking. When the Braves won their first game, which I guess was about a week ago, The story from Mark Bowman, and I'm sure the other Braves reporters told the story as well, but the story was basically that Frey Gonzalez had just decided he was going to throw everything at it to get that win, that they were so desperate for a win that he was going to do everything he could and really treat that almost like a playoff game. A guy who's willing to do that in Game 10, look, I know 0-9, but a guy who's willing to do that in Game 10 does not sound like a guy who very often is going to be willing to take a 3-2 lead into the ninth, throw a guy he knows is not his best pitcher, and go face his clubhouse when they lose 4-3.
That's right, and I think you hit the nail on the head with your last comment because, you know, we can sit on the outside and say Braves rebuilding, going to be good in a year or two, and even the guys in the front office can sit on the outside and say that, but the manager has to work with those players, look them in the eye, you know, ride on the plane with them, and, you know, I think they have to feel like you're trying to help them, you know, win as many games as you can this season, even if they know in the back of their minds that they're a real long shot to be competitive. Like, you still have to manage them competitively, and you can't just put out Grilli in the ninth inning, you know, if you don't think he's capable, because you got to look the other guys in the eye in the clubhouse later who got you that ninth inning lead.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a team that in the clubhouse. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it comes down to. They are in the clubhouse, they're trying to win games, and Freddie can't lose that team. Another place where there is some uncertainty, Cincinnati, they have now said that it is not J.J. Hoover in the ninth, but there's not a guy. Once again, I do not believe that lasts. I believe soon somebody will be the guy. Who do you think will be the guy?
Yeah, I don't like any of these options. This is like us talking about the Phillies maybe or a few weeks ago, but maybe I can't see it being Tony Cingrani. He's the kind of the name that intrigues me the most, but he's the only real left-handed option they have. And I don't think, like, I don't feel like he has the control to be the guy anyways.
Yeah.
I really don't think there's anyone I would be stashing in a mixed league right now. Now, do you see someone, other than just sticking with Hoover and hoping he pitches away out of this, do you see anyone else?
No, there's nobody. It is a lot like with the Phillies. I'm not even going to – if somebody even gets a couple in a row, I'm not going to be on that. I'm going to wait until somebody gets four or five and actually looks safe and is going to hold on to the job even if they blow one. I'm not going to be first man in on any Reds reliever.
Yeah, no, I agree. And this bullpen is going to – if you own Cincinnati starters, like, and there aren't a lot of them that are mixed league worthy, but like, this is going to cost them. They have one of the highest or one of the highest ERAs as a relief corps in baseball so far this year. Like, this is going to cost them games. I think it'll be a pretty consistent theme with them all season because they're not going to add reinforcements.
Yeah. No, I think that's certainly true. They're more likely to sell a guy who gets hot than to buy one. One other closer situation, we had talked about Sean Tolleson. He seems to have sort of ridden out the bumps. Kaonikala is not going to be the guy, at least in the first half. He's out. I am still a huge Jake Diekman fan, but I don't see Diekman supplanting Tolleson. Exhale on Tolleson?
Yeah, I think pretty much. I mean, and kudos to those who just held him and waited. And, you know, I panicked over him in one league. I didn't trade him, but I was panicked. Like, I felt panicked, and but I held. And, you know, Tolleson was fine last season. And, like, he's not a top-tier closer, but he was fine last year. And now, like, they've lost one of their options to ever replace him. He's picked up a few saves in a row, kind of earned himself some job security. You know, I feel like there's a chance now that he gets 35 saves this year, and we just look back at a week one hiccup and like it was nothing.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree with that. We move on to the hitters because, goodness, we are already getting well into the time here. A couple of guys that I am certainly interested in. One is Jason Hayward. You write that he's a guy that drives you nuts every year. To me, the thing on Hayward is, in fantasy, you kind of have to know what you're getting. He's a guy who does a lot of things, but doesn't do anything really spectacularly. And so, you know, I'm not selling on Hayward if I have him, but I'm just not having any illusions on him in the first place that he's going to get me 30 home runs or 30 steals or a 300 average or any of those things that make you say, wow. He's going to help you a little bit across the board, but those things can those things amass over the course of the year, and they're not always going to look great after a couple of weeks.
No, you're right, and you and I were both quite interested in him as the number two hitter in that, like, really good-looking lineup, and my concern with him is that if he doesn't get going, and he did have some hits yesterday, and, you know, they scored a lot of runs, so that's good for him, but that if he doesn't get going, maybe he just ends up a lot lower in the lineup, because they have options. They could put Zobrist second or something like that, and then Hayward goes all the way down to sixth or seventh, and I don't think that's necessarily the worst fit for him baseball-wise or anything, but for fantasy, like, I really liked him hitting second, and I still do. So, you know, for other Hayward owners out there, I'm going to try to be patient. There's other years where I feel like I jump off too quickly when he goes through a slump. And then last year I did jump off too early and then really regretted it because he was pretty solid the rest of the way.
We've got one of those classic guy-in-waiting stories with Trey Turner. He has been just raking at AAA. He's hitting .379. He's got 6 steals in 14 games. He is drawing walks. He's striking out some, but not a ton. He is offensively looking like everything you hoped he would be. Danny Espinosa is hitting .163 and slugging .186. And if there's one thing you really thought you could count on Danny Espinosa to do, it was hit for some power. He has not stolen a base this year. He is not a guy to own in any way in any fantasy format. And Trey Turner has been dazzling. Are you getting ahead of the curve on Turner? I don't think this change is coming real soon. At least not as long as they're winning. How do you manage this?
Yeah, you're right. I would be more optimistic that they would get him up if they were 500 right now or below 500 than if they were doing what they're doing, which is as a team doing really well. So now I feel like he's not going to be up really soon, and they can always play Steven Drew a little bit to kind of bide some time. But I do feel like Espinosa struggles. I kind of ensure that he's coming up at some point in the first half. I don't know if they already have a date or what, but I feel like he's one of my most, you know, exciting stash options right now. You know, I've moved him in my mind ahead of someone like A.J. Reed just because Tyler White's gotten off to a fine start. And so there's less of a sense of urgency to bring him up. But I don't know. I just feel like maybe by the end, it could be the end of May or something, but I just can't imagine that Espinosa can hold him off.
Yeah, I think they will be patient, not just because they're winning, but I think that's kind of Dusty Baker, and it's not that he's anti-young players, but I think he's a guy who believes in the guy who's been there, believes in the big leaguer, wants to give him every opportunity to succeed. So I do think that the leash will not be real short, especially while they're winning, but I do think Turner will be there, and I think he's going to be pretty good when he gets there. And that's the thing is in what he's doing now, and look, it's only 15 games, but to me, what he's doing now, the base of skills that he's showing, hitting for a little pop, hitting for average, you know, starts to give you the hope that maybe he's not a speed-only guy. And that's kind of the question is, are we talking about, you know, kind of a Jose Peraza guy where really the only thing he's bringing you is speed, or are we talking about somebody who can help you in more categories than just that?
Yeah, I like him as, yeah, that balance contributor. And I think that when he comes up, he's probably going to hit, you know, maybe sixth or seventh in that lineup. It'll just depend who's healthy at the time. And I don't see him at the top of the lineup, assuming that, you know, all the key pieces are there. But, you know, maybe long-term he will be, but not right away. So, yeah, I think he'll give that balanced, you know, profile of production where he gets, maybe steals are his best category, but he's also scoring runs, driving in some runs, hitting for a decent average. Yeah, I think he's someone, if like, I get a lot of stash questions on Twitter, and he and Peraza are two of my favorites. Peraza, because I just think the Reds, there's a lot of ways they could get him in the lineup, and I feel like they need that spark plug.
One other quick thing before we get to the two-star pitchers, because it's something that I have, I'm dealing with. You basically listed every catcher I have in my two primary leagues. Yasmani Grandal is getting base hits relative to guys sort of kind of in that tier, Realmuto, Montero, Ramos. I like Grandal the most of those guys. I am starting him, actually right now I'm starting him over Darno and Realmuto in one league. But do you like him a lot? Do you like him some? Where are you on him?
Yeah, I'd say I probably like him the most of that group, although Montero interests me with Schwarber gone. You know, like that maybe helps him handle a little more workload, and I like that lineup. But, yeah, I think Grandal has maybe a little more potential than those other players. Like, I like Realmuto just in the sense if he can get you a few steals on top of a few homers. But I think Grandal, like, he was quite good for a lot of last season and then tailed off with the injury at the end. But I think maybe has a little more potential than those other players. So I get a lot on Twitter of one catcher league questions, and I think the answer for if you're in a one catcher league is you just rotate based on schedule among that group of players that are always cycling through waivers. And you just look at upcoming schedule. But in a two catcher league like yours, yeah, I think I do like Grandal.
To me, Grandal was the one guy in that bunch who is likely to put up a legitimate All Star season. The one guy you're likely to look at the end of the year, and he hit .280 with 20 home runs.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking is. You know, I thought, well, I don't think Realmuto can provide the home runs, and Ramos, I don't think, can provide that profile either, and I don't think Montero can anymore. So, yeah, I feel like he's a little more ceiling than the other options.
I will say in that category, Ramos is probably second for me. He's probably the guy that is second most likely to have a big year. I also think his floor is very low, but he's a guy I wouldn't be shocked to see have a very good year.
Yeah, he's had wild fluctuations in his career on how well he's played and on exactly how he's produced. Like, his averages fluctuate, his power's fluctuated. He's been all over the place at times.
All right, and now we will close out with two start pitchers, and I will note for everybody listening out there, this is what a nice guy Fred is. He noticed that I made a dumb bumble recently with Cody Anderson and Chase Anderson, and now we have first names for the pitchers on this list, so he's a good man.
Those two things weren't actually connected, but I'll take credit for it.
So some guys that are very interesting, the one that really go down the list first, Porcello, Malone, Stripling, Drew Pomeranz, Jimmy Nelson, Ubaldo Jimenez. The guy on that bunch that really jumps out to me is Ubaldo. He can be very good. He has been very good not that long ago. And two, at Tampa Bay, home against the White Sox, seems like a pretty good pair of matchups.
No, you're right. He's the boomer bust. He's not my favorite one on the list, but I think he's the boomer bust one on the list because he's probably, across those two starts, going to get you a dozen strikeouts and maybe more. It's just how many batters is he going to walk and how much is he going to hurt your whip along the way. And I haven't really looked yet at who he's going to be against. You know, you hope that he's not facing Chris Sale or someone like that. But, yeah, he could be really good or really bad. It takes some nerves to pick him up and use him in a mixed league on a two-start week, but the payoff can be pretty big.
I'm going to guess that the top of your list is either Stripling at home against the Marlins and Padres or Pomeranz at San Francisco and at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, they're kind of 1 and 1A for me. I don't know long-term what I expect from Stripling, like if I think he's going to be someone we're still talking about in July, but those are just, he's off to a good start. Teams haven't seen him, and those are two great matchups for him at home. And then Pomeranz, we've talked about this kind of every week since the season started. Pomeranz is probably number one for me, a little ahead of Stripling, just because I do think there's a chance that we're talking about Pomeranz still in July. So he's looked pretty good so far, and he had some good – he pitched well for the A's, even though they kept switching his role. But I think that we could be onto something a little bit with him here, especially in that, you know, being able to pitch for the Padres environment.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. This is a guy who, I mean, to some extent, you can almost call him an extreme post-hype sleeper. This is a guy that people thought was going to be really good not that long ago.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just some really interesting options this week. Porcello interests me just in the sense of it's hard not to start someone who's pitching for the Red Sox and going into Atlanta.
Yeah.
But then you have to absorb the start against the Yankees later in the week, and he tends to go really good or really bad. So he's a little bit like Ubaldo, different type of pitcher, but a little like Ubaldo in that way. We wouldn't be surprised to see him get two wins next week, and we wouldn't be surprised if he threw three innings and gave up six runs when he plays the Yankees.
Yeah, those Yankee lefties scared me a lot against Porcello.
Yeah, it's that one's a really tough call, and you won't know till later in the week because that's the second start. That Braves matchup is really enticing, though.
Yes. No, it's true. All right, well, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk. Let's say we do this again in a week.
Yeah, hopefully these pitchers can get themselves straightened out before we talk again.